Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Xfinity Mobile, featuring customized wireless plans. Customers can choose unlimited, buy the gig, shared data, or a mix of both and switch it up anytime. Learn more at xfinitymobile.com.
The FDA has no control over cosmetics, but they and the EPA are supposed to be protecting us from other potential health and environmental risks. How good a job are they doing? We're going to put that question to a couple of journalists who cover that issue, including a familiar voice to us, our health reporter, Sarah Varney.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also joining us, Mark Shapiro, editorial director of the Center for Investigative Reporting. He's author of the book Exposed, The Toxic Chemistry of Everyday Products and What's at Stake for American Power. Mark, good to have you here as well.
Good to be here.
Your book, Mark, explores the different approaches that the U.S. and the European Union have taken in the past few years over regulation of these kinds of products. Describe that divergence and how are we doing it differently?
All right. Well, going off what Mike was just talking about.
Mike Wilson.
Mike Wilson was just talking about a few minutes ago. He was talking about all the chemicals that have been grandfathered into the market here in the United States, some 62,000 chemicals. So the European Union went and looked at those chemicals and determined and is beginning the process of saying, wait a minute, we've got thousands of chemicals now on the market that we've never assessed for their toxicity. And so they are beginning systematically to demand data from manufacturers that has never been demanded before in the United States. So that's one huge difference between Europe and the United States. And they've also begun systematically to look at the chemical content of numerous consumer products. So everything like your piece on cosmetics, for example. What you were talking about there was the lack of FDA authority over cosmetics. So the European Union is not accepting that any longer. And they're saying, hold on here. If there are carcinogenic substances that cause mutation in human genes or damage to the reproductive system, should not be in cosmetics. And so systematically, they're beginning to demand the removal of those substances.
So And in your book, as you pointed out in great detail, that the chemical industry fought tooth and nail against those kinds of regulations to no avail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The chemical industry was sending lobbyists on a regular basis to the Brussels, capital of the European Union.
Now, the changes that are happening there and some of the changes that we've been talking about here in California with products like phthalates and other ingredients that are potentially harmful to us. What impact did the changes here and the changes there have on the country as a whole in terms of how the industry is going to begin marketing perhaps different products for Europe? Are we going to be getting those products here?
Yes. Well, I think what's very interesting is to understand that American companies have never had to obey other countries' rules ever before. Never happened before. The rules that happened here in the United States were essentially the rules for the world. Now that's switched. The European Union is now a larger economy than the United States. Huge change. So when the European Union now begins imposing these new environmental laws on the chemicals that they allow their citizens to be exposed to, American companies have to decide. Do we want to hold on to this European market, huge market for American companies, or are we going to give it up? And so in many cases, in many different industries, number one, there are two things happening. Either some companies are actually adapting to European regulations and we become the accidental beneficiaries of those regulations. Also, by the way, the EPA becomes totally irrelevant in that situation. Or they begin to establish a line of products that will meet the European standards and other products simply for Americans that would not meet that. And that's how we in America have become the sort of bottom end of a global double standard.
A dumping ground.
The dumping ground for products that you cannot sell in Europe.
Sarah Varney, you've done a lot of reporting on phthalates, and there's a new law about to take effect in California. Tell us what phthalates are and why the law has focused on six of these particular phthalates.
Phthalates are a particular type of additive that's usually added to polyvinyl chloride to make it really soft and flexible. And it's used it's used in many, many – phthalates are used in many, many things. But in this case, in toys and childcare products essentially. And so in January of next year, phthalates, these six particular phthalates, which are of the most concern in terms of their health risks, will be banned in California. There's a federal law that will go into effect in February as well.
And so is the one here, is it duplicative? I mean, is it going to accomplish something different than the federal law?
There's a lot of discussions right now between the California Attorney General's office and federal officials in terms of whether or not the California law is, in a sense, preempted by the federal law. But what is definitely clear is that California did go a step further than the federal law to specifically say you cannot substitute a phthalate with something that's known to cause cancer or reproductive harm. And that part of the California law is – it will definitely go into effect. And so that's what I've been really looking into is, okay, well, now these phthalates are being banned, and they've been banned in Europe since 1999. What has actually been used in their place? And it turns out nobody knows, really. There's a couple. Because they don't have to disclose. And so if I bought some phthalate-free toys for my son, and I wanted to find out, well, if they're not phthalates in them, what's in them? I can't find that out. I call the EPA. I call the California EPA. I call these sorts of – I call the companies. They don't have to tell me. And it actually turns out that in Europe, although they have this very aggressive type of chemical regulation, they don't know either. And so they're – it's a bit of a black box to a certain extent of what are the substitutes that are coming onto the market when we do these individual kind of chemical bans.
Now, the chemical industry, I'm sure, opposed the original version of that law here in California. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. They were in Sacramento vehemently opposing it.
And so that and other legislation recently signed by the governor is the result of a compromise, as things often are in politics. So what is your sense of the benefit that's going to come from these various protective laws like the phthalate ban in California? Is it something that's going to happen overnight, or is it going to be something that happens gradually over time?
Well, I think the main question – I think to answer your question, toys and teething rings, for instance, are not necessarily the primary way that children, for instance, get exposed to phthalates. It's a place to start, and it's why the European Union started with toys. But there are so many other routes of exposure, particularly for pregnant women. And so most of what we know about phthalates has been – is what we know about, say, pregnant rats who are exposed to phthalates, or pregnant women who have been exposed to phthalates, and what does that do to their baby, their offspring, most their baby boys. So I think while there may be some you'll minimize the exposure to phthalates when this ban goes into effect in January, it certainly won't really do much to stem the stream of exposure.
And San Francisco, Mark, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just would add to what Sarah said. I think the beginning is like toys, but there are so many other sources of exposure that basically can be addressed only with the kind of a whole systematic approach.
Well, and that's what Mike Wilson was talking about, is that, you know, this is an example of legislation that focused on a particular chemical. But you're saying, Mark, that it's less effective than doing it in a comprehensive way?
A comprehensive way in determining what are the routes of exposure for other carcinogens or endocrine disruptors like phthalates are. Where else do we get them? I mean, the phthalates are in automobile dashboards, for example, which little children obviously drive in. They don't drive, they drive in. So I think what we're missing here is a seriously systematic look at all the ways through which we are exposed to toxic chemicals.
And there's a broad understanding of that, clearly in California, where we have this Green Chemistry Initiative. And in fact, when the governor signed the phthalate ban, he sort of reluctantly did so, saying, I'll sign this one, but – you know, I really want to see much more comprehensive kind of regulation. And in fact, just last year, there were several individual bans on bisphenol A and some others that actually – well, that one didn't actually pass out of the assembly. But the governor refused to sign specifically because he wanted a broader framework.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with Sarah Varney and Mark Shapiro after a short break. You're listening to Health Dialogues. And we continue with Health Dialogues. I'm Scott Schaefer, and we're talking this hour about chemicals in some very common consumer products, maybe things on your holiday shopping list. And our guests at the moment, Sarah Varney from the California Report, our health reporter. Also here, Mark Shapiro. He is the author of Exposed, the Toxic Chemistry of Everyday Products and What's at Stake for American Power. We were talking before the break about some steps that California is taking to hone in on phthalates and then more generally to create a framework for green chemistry. What are some of the loopholes in that, the shortcomings of what California seems to be edging toward? Mark Shapiro?
Well, that is very interesting because it's really, for example, what is green? I mean, it's a nice little color we like very much.
kind of a Rorschach test for chemists.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look. It's whatever you want it to be. We were talking earlier about this notion of benign substances. Is a substance ever going to be perfectly benign? I think what we're talking about here is substances that are less, you know, I mean, less malevolent, I think, is a much more reasonable place to aspire towards than perfectly benign, to be totally honest. We're talking about substances that are sometimes synthetic, other times are based on biological material, which I think is many chemists are going towards new kind of forms of biological material. But the notion that we're going to get something that's absolutely perfectly benign is, I'm not sure, is a reasonable assumption. However, that said, there is a whole array of protections that we could be putting on right now that would ensure we're not getting the most malevolent substances, which we are now on a routine basis. And I think that's the critical matter. So not to get too caught up in imagining what I think is not necessarily possible.
So don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
That's another way to say it.
Sarah, what are your thoughts about that, about some of the – I mean, obviously this is a step in a good direction. I think a lot of people would agree. But there are some – we shouldn't expect too much too soon in terms of protection for us in the products we buy.
I think this is going to take many, many years, and we'll hear later from Warren Gorson from Cal EPA about how long this is going to take. But there, you know, I think you've mentioned this, that there are two bills that have currently been passed and were signed by the governor that essentially give very broad authority to California EPA to regulate chemicals, much broader than they have now. And I think the people who authored those bills will be the first to admit that they're far from perfect, and there'll likely be some cleanup legislation in the next year or so. But those bills really don't necessarily authorize the state to require the companies provide the data. They are really just sort of broad, like the Green Chemistry Report, they are really broad frameworks that regulators will have to sort of figure out what are they going to do with this power.
Is that kind of like Prop 65, where there's really – or even less than that? Prop 65 is a required kind of a – you have to provide warnings to people if – certain substances are present, but you can't do anything to regulate them.
Right. Well, essentially what could happen under this particular new authority is the California EPA could look at certain chemicals and decide that they're going to restrict them or do an outright ban, or they could say, you know, this maybe fits under Mark's definition of it's not as bad for us as we think, and there aren't really great alternatives. So if you're looking at, say, phthalates in medical tubing versus phthalates in toys, you may say, well, there aren't great alternatives necessarily for phthalates in medical tubing, which I think there are. But if you make that case, you might be able to say, well, for this particular exception, you know, we'll allow this chemical to go in because the benefit is greater than taking it away.
And kids would be probably more vulnerable, especially if they're teething on something or playing with something. And, you know, they're also in a different stage of development, perhaps.
Absolutely. So. And I think there's throughout the next couple years, as state regulators sort of march through this world, they're going to be talking a lot about vulnerable populations. So they're going to be looking at pregnant women and certainly infants and children. And how do you specifically stem exposure for those populations while, you know, exposure to phthalates for somebody, a 65-year-old male, probably not really that big of a problem.
We haven't talked a lot about electronics, but you can be sure that we're selling a whole lot of iPods and cell phones and all kinds of gadgets this holiday season. Mark, what are some of the concerns out there in terms of we're going to be talking more about disposal of electronic goods, but what are your thoughts about some of the potential hazards there for consumers?
Well, the hazards in electronics are interesting because inside each of those neat little devices that we each have, and iPods and computers and printers and et cetera, are small amounts of metals and chemicals that are used to essentially make the electronics work. And we're talking about chromium, cadmium, even mercury, lead, polybrominated flame retardants. And there's great concern, not that when you're using it, but when you discard it and they end up in those very big heaps, those scrap heaps and the trash dumps, what happens when 10,000 computer monitors begin to leak? And they leak into the water, into the air of the substances that are inside. And so what I looked at in my book was essentially how the European Union has begun to demand that the six most toxic substances inside those machines be removed. And they did that also by requiring that the manufacturers be responsible for the disposal. Doesn't exist here in America. But in Europe, you go to any European electronics store, they have a take-back station where you're there. And so the company is responsible for disposing. The last thing I would say, just to pick up on what you were talking about earlier very quickly, the assumption in America is that a chemical is innocent until proven guilty. And we have to start beginning to change that approach from basically demonstrate the innocence of a chemical.
All right. Maybe some things to learn from Europe. All right. Mark Shapiro and Sarah Varney, thank you both very much. Coming up, we're going to be talking with one of California's top regulators about what the state is doing to usher in a new era of consumer protection. And we'll hear reaction to that from the American Chemistry Council. You're listening to Health Dialogues.